Holy Gospel for this Transfiguration Sunday is from the 17th chapter of Matthew, beginning at verse 1. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And Jesus was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." And while Jesus was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them. And from the cloud a voice said, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and don't be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." This is the gospel of the Lord. You may be seated. It's good to be with you again. Thank you for the warm welcome, and I know it was a surprise to all of us, right? But great text today. Peter. You heard the name Peter today, right? Peter. Oh, Peter. I love to try to figure that guy out when I read the Bible. Peter, one of Jesus' disciples. And now Peter is one of just three disciples that Jesus takes with him to the top of this mountain. And he is a witness not only of this transfiguration time, but he's a witness to so much of Jesus' earthly ministry. What a lucky guy. If only we could have been like Peter, right? If we could have been there. We would get it, right? We have quite a few stories in the Bible that include Peter. He showed up at Jesus' empty tomb on Easter morning. He saw Jesus perform miracles with fish and bread. He witnessed Jesus healing people, bringing Peter's mother-in-law back from the dead. Peter was there for big, capital B, big stuff. He was also very human. He was a blunderer, I'm going to say that word again, a blunderer and a blurter, a blurter. A blunderer is someone who jumps in without much consideration. How do we see this with Peter? Well, two stories. One, at his arrest, I'm going to talk about in a minute. He's a blunderer who jumps in to try to save Jesus when Jesus hasn't asked him to. And second, he jumps in the water when he finds out Jesus is on the shore, and he just jumps out of the boat. Those are just two. I can relate to Peter. I can relate to somebody who kind of says, "I'm not going to think this through, I'm just going to act." Any of you ever do that? Just act. Don't think it through. I get carried away with the emotion of the moment, and I'm ready to say yes to things about which I am excited. While I was still recovering from brain surgery 2 years ago, a colleague contacted me and asked, "Would you like to come and live in Tanzania for 6 weeks and help support a Lutheran church program there? You know, the place that you have been to 7 times? "I'd love to," I blurted. I was so excited, and I couldn't wait to tell my closest family and my dearest friends about this idea. And I was met with silence. And half-hearted, "Okay, but you just started driving a car again. Really?" You see, I wasn't healed enough to fly halfway around the world to East Africa and to go and live there by myself for a while. But I blurted it out. I get Peter. I got so excited. I love Tanzania. I love the people there. I love how they worship. And I thought, yes, this could be a great step for me. Oh, maybe not now. Maybe not now. Any of you ever have an experience like that where you were like, I'm going to jump into this, and I haven't thought it through? Every time, ever volunteer for something that you quickly wondered, why did I just say yes to that? Or did something that might have been a bit, said something that was a little bit tactless or blunt or too honest? Our blurting can be true or less than true, or it may spill the beans and reveal something we were asked to hold in confidence, right? Here are some ways that Peter was a blurter as a disciple of Jesus. In chapter 16 of Matthew, he blurts, Jesus, you are the Messiah, the Son of God. And the people of Israel have been waiting for over 1,000 years. And Peter, you know, Peter's right when he says that. But Jesus says to him, oh, Peter, blessed are you, Simon of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. You heard this from God. And I tell you, you are Peter. And on this rock, I will build my church. And a short time later, when Jesus tells his disciples that he will suffer and die, but will be resurrected from the dead, Peter jumps up to stop the hard news. God forbid it! Lord, this must never happen to you. And what did Jesus say? He turned to him and he said, Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block for me. You are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. Ugh. Peter, the blurter. Peter, the rock. Peter, the foundation stone. Jesus will build a church on the ministry and leadership of Peter. But he is also a stumbling block, getting in the way of what Jesus needed to accomplish. All in the same fallible person, a strong witness of faith, and the one who gets in the way. This is Transfiguration Sunday. In the church year, it marks the end of the time of Jesus' birth and his first ministry days, and we enter into the most important and complex days at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. It's a journey now to the cross after this, where we know he will suffer and die for the sake of the world and then rise again on Easter morning. On Wednesday, we mark the beginning of the season of Lent with our Ash Wednesday services. We mark this time with today's story of Jesus' transfiguration, this miracle, and then we're going to go on to Ash Wednesday and the 7 weeks of Lent, and then Holy Week, Monday, Thursday, Good Friday, and then eventually Easter morning. So back to this transfiguration that takes place on the mountaintop. Jesus asks his closest disciples, Peter, James, and John, to go with him. And once they got to the top, did you notice things started to happen? Jesus' face takes on this glow, a bright glow. He becomes light, literally. He's radiant and with light that comes from his face. And his clothes, which, given the time, likely when they arrived, were rather dingy, undyed robes, and they become dazzling white. And then two men appear on each side of Jesus, Moses and Elijah, two of the greatest and most godly men of history who saved God's people in terrible times. Oh, and one more big surprise. They both were alive like 1,000 and 2,000 to 3,000 years ago. And then a cloud appears, an ancient symbol of the presence of God. And the voice of God speaks to everyone there. This is my son, the beloved. I am very pleased with him. Listen to what he has to say. Listen to him. How would you have reacted if you had been there? What would you have done? What would you have wanted to do? What would you have wanted to say or to get involved in? With the appearance, well, okay, so this is Peter, right? Oh, I forgot to lift up again how Peter reacted to all this. Peter blurts again. He steps into the story and he gets in the way. And he says to them, guys, listen up. I got an idea. Let's build three tents or three little houses. One for Jesus in the middle, one for Moses, one for Elijah. And we can stay here in this glorious light. And we can just listen to what wisdom they have for us, and it'll be great. Maybe people will come up here to hear. Maybe people will want to come and see what this is about. Isn't this a great idea? And then I imagine things that take shape in Peter's mind. He gets a bigger dream. Like, if it was today, he'd say, I got it. Holy Land Disneyland. Up here. You know, a ride up the mountain, a ride down the mountain. There'll be songs. There'll be stuff for kids to do. You know, it'll be huge. That's what he's imagining. That's what's in Peter's mind. Oh, man, we could have this best thing. And that Moses and Elijah are back from the dead? And they're up here talking and teaching? Oh, we are going to rule the world. Think about how many people are going to come. It'll draw everybody. It'll be beautiful, and it'll be, again, huge. Now, here's a quick refresher about Moses and Elijah. Maybe their stories are new to you, but they were a capital B big deal. Moses was a Hebrew child born in slavery, but his mother saved his life in a basket in the Nile River, and he was taken and raised by Pharaoh's family. Eventually, Moses comes to understand who he really is, but not before he's become very powerful in Moses, in Pharaoh's regime. But eventually he has to run away, and God called him to a mountain. I get it, a mountain, and spoke to him from a burning bush. Moses returned to face a new Pharaoh, and he demanded the freedom of his people from complying and following the ways of Pharaoh. He comes back to confront Pharaoh. Pharaoh will not release the Hebrew people. He will not release the slaves. And it takes a series of plagues, 10 plagues, plague after plague, before Pharaoh would finally release Moses and the Hebrew people. And when they were set free, Pharaoh changed his mind yet again. And he sent an army to chase them. And as they crossed the Red Sea, which had been parted to allow them safe passage, the waters come in and drown the army that's coming to take them. They wander in the wilderness for 40 years. But God led them through. God provided all they needed and promised them a new land. That story's in Exodus. From Moses, the Passover celebration was the greatest festival of God's people for the 1,500, 2,000 years before it happened. And when Jesus holds his Last Supper, they are actually gathered to celebrate the Passover. And it shapes how we understand Holy Communion today. Then there was Elijah. Elijah was a prophet. We read about him in the Old Testament. He is chosen by God to speak against the evil King Ahab and his wife Jezebel. They ruled the northern kingdom of Israel 850 years before Jesus. Jezebel was a foreigner and a pagan worshiper, and she wanted Ahab and the rest of the Israelites to worship Baal and the other pagan gods instead of the one true God. Elijah called God to bring a drought, and it lasted 3.5 years. 3.5 years of crop failure. God provided for Elijah with food brought to him by, first, ravens. Birds carried in food for him. And then through a widow, who we only know as the widow of Zarephath. And through her, God offered a miracle of flour and oil that never ran out. As long as they had need, there was always oil and flour. Elijah was called to a contest by the power of the one true God against Baal. And he won the contest, calling down fire from heaven and killing all the pagan priests. Elijah's story is told in the Old Testament book of 1 Kings. See, they were a big deal. And Peter could see that having them come back as an even bigger deal. And he wanted to hold on to the moment, right? Isn't that what we want to do? We want to stay here. We want to hold on to this glory. We want to hold on to this light. We want to hold on to this joy. We want to hold on to this miracle. We'd want to do the same thing, right? But then God breaks in and speaks a new word. Well, actually a new and an old word, echoing words from Psalm 2 from the Old Testament and heard again at Jesus' baptism. God says to everyone there, "This is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." Listen to him. These are the new words of God to Peter and James and John. And as I hope I would do, Peter finally closes his mouth. He closes his mouth. And they all fall to the ground, afraid of this new and booming voice from the heavens. There are no instructions that they should build tents or buildings. No instructions to build a Holy Land Disneyland. No blessing of Peter's plans. No support to hold on to what is happening. Just three little words. Listen to him. Listen to him. Well, isn't that what they've been doing? I mean, they're traveling with Jesus. Aren't they always listening to him? Or aren't they? The comfort for me, and I hope for you, in this story is that people who could reach out and touch Jesus, his disciples, his dearest friends, they could listen to him in the flesh. But they didn't always hear him, right? They didn't always hear him. You catch that difference between they knew he was speaking, but they didn't always hear what he had to say. Like us, they would get caught up in the excitement of the miracles, in the celebrity of the connection, in the headiness of all that was possible, and they didn't hear what Jesus was really saying. Jesus was not building an earthly kingdom of political power. Jesus was not building an earthly kingdom of political power. He was not about constructing beautiful temples. He was not about unseating the powers that be so that he could take the throne. What was Jesus about? He was about the love of God through healing hands and healing words and healing relationships. About restoring health and restoring families and restoring communities. I wonder when Peter got it. You know, when did he actually understand that Jesus was the Son of God in the flesh and that his goal was not about establishing himself as king of the earth, but as the Son of God, the Prince of Peace, right? I wonder when he got it. Now, we do know from the Bible that Peter's blurting, it continued. When Jesus was arrested, and he told them several times that he would be arrested. What happened? Well, when they arrest Jesus, Peter comes up with a sword and cuts off the ear of one of the guards. And Jesus doesn't say, "Good for you, way to go." He immediately takes his hand and he heals the ear of the man who Peter had just cut his ear off. And then when Jesus was on trial, very public trial, Peter didn't want to leave Jesus alone, but he was also afraid for himself. He was afraid that he would be arrested, that he would be put on trial. So he's hiding, he's undercover, and then people start figuring out who he is, and they're saying, "Oh, you're that friend of Jesus, aren't you? Aren't you the one who knows him? Weren't you with him at that?" And they name a place. And they say, "I saw you with him." And Peter, what does Peter do? "No, you were mistaken. I never knew him. I never said I knew him. I wasn't any of those places you said. No, it's not me." Three times Jesus is denied by his friend Peter. And after his death, Peter and the other disciples went into hiding. And they only emerged from hiding after the women found Jesus' empty tomb on Easter morning. There's another encounter about Peter in the Bible, and it takes place after he rises from the dead. And three times in John's gospel, Jesus says to Peter, "Peter, do you love me?" And three times, the same number of times that Peter denied knowing Jesus, he says, "Yes, Lord, I love you." He gets kind of exasperated by the third time. "Of course I love you." But Jesus gives Peter these commands in response to his statements. He says, "Feed my sheep. Tend my lambs. Care for my flock." He gives him a job. And it's almost as if in the three commands, Jesus wipes out the guilt of those three denials Peter said when Jesus was under arrest. Maybe Peter has finally learned to listen. This may be the moment when Peter truly and faithfully gets it. I think we can take some comfort in Peter's story, his faith journey, because friends, he was right there. Right there. And he didn't get it all the time. There's hope for you and me if we have times when we doubt, when we don't get it, when we read something in the Bible and say, "What is that about?" There's hope for us. There's hope for us. When you do get it, when you glimpse what Jesus is calling you to do or to be, because friends, he's calling you every day. He's calling you every single day. On that mountaintop, in today's Bible reading, Peter and the disciples are instructed by God the Father to listen to him. Listen to him. That's where our ministry begins. As followers of Jesus, is first to listen to him. And Peter is never the same again. Peter is also transfigured in today's story. Not like Jesus. He didn't have a glow. He didn't have perfectly white clothes. He didn't have his father's voice or those ancient prophets and leaders come. But Peter will be changed. The same instruction given to us. Listen to him. Here's once how it happened to me. In 1991, I was in the corporate world, kind of moving the ladder up. But I was also the mother of one child. I was separated from my husband and headed to divorce. It was a time of questioning, like, am I doing the right thing? Who am I now? What does this mean for my child? What does this mean for me? And then one Sunday in church, there was an announcement in the bulletin. You guys have your bulletins, right? You have announcements in them. And I opened it up, and it said, "Adult men and women needed to lead high school mission trip for Habitat for Humanity." Adult men and women needed for a mission trip for Habitat for Humanity in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That'd be kind of fun. But I don't have any experience leading teenagers. I don't have construction experience other than my dad teaching me stuff on the farm. I have a job. I have a career. I have a daughter. But every Sunday, you know what? In my bulletin, that announcement was always there. And in my bulletin, in my mind, every week it got a little bit bigger. The font got bigger in my bulletin. I remember looking at my friends and going, "Is it in hers? Same size as everybody else's." It kept calling me, and I kept coming up with, why not? Why not? Finally, after I felt like the letters were like this big, I thought, I got to talk to the pastor. Maybe I waited long enough, and he's got enough volunteers. Then he doesn't need me anymore. And I walked up to Pastor Jeff, and I said, "Pastor Jeff, do you still need any adult leaders for Milwaukee? You're in. I've been waiting for you. I've been waiting for you." It changed my life. I discovered skills and gifts I didn't know I had, and I learned about racial segregation that divided the city of Milwaukee, as well as so many other American cities. I had a faith awakening with those young people that I hadn't expected. When I came back and I told my parents, I discovered that I was pretty good at working with teenagers. My mother said, well, her version of duh, of course, she said, you have 10 nieces and nephews that are older than your daughter. They all adore you, and they all will do anything you want them to do. Look at how much you're good with them. I am grateful for a bulletin that had expanding letters. When Jesus said, listen to me, he was saying that to me through that bulletin. How are you going to answer the next time Jesus calls you? How will you answer when he says, listen to me? This morning, later today, tomorrow, next week, I promise you, you are being asked to listen, to follow, to care for God's people and God's world. I think part of what we have witnessed in Minnesota, and especially here in the Twin Cities in the last 2 months, are a group of people who listened to a call from God. Care for your neighbor. Stand up for your neighbor. It is in our bone marrow. It is in our bone marrow. You are being asked to follow, to care, to listen, to challenge, and to be a part of taking care of God's world. So I'm going to invite you now to take a deep breath. Take us a minute. I won't even make you do it for a minute. We'll do it for 30 seconds, okay? 30 seconds of silence and to say, God, I want to listen to you. May we hear and obey. Amen.